Welcome to the Contractor Fight Podcast. It is awesome to be here today. Dan, what's going on, man?
I am living the life here, Tom. Having a great day. Got some new leads in for the paint biz, and my crew is cleaning up without me around. So life is where I want it to be.
Isn't that fun when the phone's ringing, man? It just gives such an energy. I know you, as a painting contractor, and you're in a cold climate, you're probably looking to hang yourself a couple times a year when the phone ain't ringing. I know I was.
Yeah. I was missing the calls. Got to tie myself undone, get off the chair.
Yeah. but that's cool. I'm actually, I'm in lovely Pomona, California in a hotel. And so if you guys are hearing any feedback or anything, I apologize. It's probably because I'm out of the normal studio. I'm out here filming for the new HGTV show that's coming out in 2021 that I'm hosting. And my biggest challenge at the present moment is I'm trying not to spill the incredibly full and hot cup of coffee that I'm holding on the couch right now, the hotel room. So, but anyway, I know we got a cool human being here with us today. Joe, what's going on, man?
Hey, Tom, how's everything?
I am doing great. Doing great, man. Joe, we're going to shoot the shit here today a bit. I'd love for you to just kind of give us kind of an overview. Who you are, what do you do? And then we'll get into that stuff in more detail.
All right. Joe McPherson, owner of Capstone Waterproofing Solutions. We keep water away from people's homes, the basements. And we're loving life right now. Life is great.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. How long you been doing this?
Been in business as a general contractor for 10 years, but waterproofing itself, maybe about 5.
Gotcha. Awesome, man. Well, I'm super fired up to talk with you today. But before we get into it, see, Dan, I can do it. I can stay on task. I can remember that we have a segment of the show that we call For the Win. And so I just want to read this because this is kind of cool. This came in actually yesterday, or I saw it yesterday. It's from 2 weeks ago. Christopher Shaw. Check this out, guys. This is so cool. I mean, just quick timeout because it's a reverb tangent now. So I'm sorry. do you realize, like, Joe, how old are you?
43.
All right, you're 43. So you're that age, man. I'm 51. Dan's 51, right? 51?
Yep.
Yeah. And 51. By the way, it's Neil's birthday Friday. Okay. So anyway, see, who knows what the fuck we're getting here today, guys. We're all the age where we can remember a world where it wasn't downloadable. You know what I mean? Where we didn't have these little devices that we carry around now. We can access information, connect anywhere in the world. So what I'm about to read here is pretty fucking cool. Just blows my mind. Christopher says, "Hi, Tom. I am Chris from Scotland in the UK. Like, just stop there a minute. Holy shit. And when I look at our podcast stats, we get tens of thousands of downloads a month. And I see Scotland. I see, like, Nigeria. Fucking words I can't pronounce, like, in Russia and countries like that. I am just blown away. Let's just take a minute. Not to freak you out and make anyone nervous, but we're literally being listened to all over planet Earth. Isn't that cool that we can do? I don't care what you do. If you do what we're doing here, or if you're a life coach that has a business, or if you're a website company that has a podcast, like, how cool is it? I'm just grateful that we have the opportunity to get in so many ears around the globe. So I'm reeling it in now because I can go way far on this. But
we are the world slowly fading in the background.
We are the world. Okay. Anyway. So anyway, let me get back on task here. See, I was all right. Tom, I'm Chris from Scotland in the UK. What a difference. And let me say, I'm just gonna read it. What a difference you've made to my business from listening to your videos and podcasts or videos. Finally, after 3 years in business, I worked out my hourly rate for the business and running costs. I know my figures now. Your videos have been a massive help to me in my business. No one ever helped me or taught me anything business-wise, so I've learned so much from you. Can't thank you enough, Chris. Okay, like, that shit makes my day. And it makes my day because in the fight, our mission, Dan, isn't this funny how I'm about to bring up what we talked about on our meeting again today? Like, you know where I'm going. Like, it's so important that you are dialed into why your company exists. I don't care what the fuck you do. You have to be clear on why you exist and what it means on the big scale. Like, and so we started the contractor fight and made our mission after many, many months of debating within our team. What is our mission? And it's to simply bring respect and dignity back to the trades. And so Chris in the UK, in Scotland there, I want to bust out my Mike Myers accent from So I Married an Axe Murderer right now. Anyway, I
won't. That bastard.
Hits paper now. Anyway. let him go upstairs and cry himself to sleep on his big pillow.
Oh, Jesus. Braveheart we're going to now. Yeah.
It's like an orange on a toothpick. Look at that thing. It's got its own atmosphere. Anyway, or whatever the hell he says. So to my knowledge, because we have thousands of people that are in our programs and things like that. To my knowledge, I don't know if Chris has ever given us a dime for coaching. Okay. And Chris, if you have, and I'm forgetting, or I didn't see it, like you're in one of our group programs. I deeply apologize. I don't mean to like be a dick about it. Okay. To my knowledge, Chris is just consuming the shit that we talk about for free, which helps us fulfill our mission of bringing respect and dignity back to the trades. And that's why I'm spending some time on this before we really get into this show here today is what I love about this business that we have, Dan, is we can fulfill our mission without ever collecting a dime, you know? Yep. And that's pretty fucking cool. Now, I will say, if you want to move faster, pay us. Get in a program, okay? Like Joe has. And Joe's moving pretty quick, made a lot of changes. We're going to get into that. But anyway, I just want to take a moment and just kind of go, this is pretty cool, because this is just one of a lot of messages we get. Like there was another guy, you know, wrote in, I'll probably read it in the next episode or two. I mean, we get messages like, man, I got my head out of my ass. I own my crap. Got around fucking winners in your free Facebook group. And they gave me some shit about some stuff that I was fucking up in my business. And then, you know, fast forward a year, I got my self-confidence up. I started knowing my numbers. I got my worth where it needed to be, my value. I started charging more and blah, 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 blah. It saved my marriage. Like, yeah. Guys, this, so no pressure, Joe, but you got to be good today, man.
It's going to be good. I'm going to be good. Trust me. I'm ready.
Joe is good. And that, what inspired me to get in touch with him about being on the podcast was I saw his video where he's announcing consolidating from GC to waterproofing specialist. I was like, holy shit, like people are listening. You know, he's like, they're following our advice. They're moving their lives forward. And what you just said about our mission and how it doesn't matter if people give us a dime, we can fulfill it. Joe will talk about his mission to educate people on waterproofing. And it's really, not to put words in your mouth, Joe, but like it's public service for him. And if it comes around into a transaction, then great. But it's a problem that probably exists to more homeowners than you could ever service anyway yourself. Yeah. So you're just trying to throw that knowledge out in the community, which is great.
So, and you brought up, you know, the specialization part of this here. Dan, I don't know if you remember this from the painting world, but the PCA Painting Contractors Association, great organization. If you're a painter, get your ass in there. They would have at the annual conferences a panel discussion. So they used to have two guys on the stage, each end of the table, and it was a debate. And one guy was like, I do everything. And the other guy was like, I specialize in something. Okay. So this whole debate of specialize, not specialize, I'm not picking a side for anybody but myself. You know what I mean? So for myself, and the way my brain works and things like that, specializing makes sense to me. I think it's just easier to get excellent at one thing. And, you know, there's Dan, you know, there's, I mean, for years, the first, what, 10, 12, 13 years of your business, you were exterior painting only. Right. Yep. And then, you know, in recent years you added the interior side. And so there's benefits to both. So I'm saying that because, you know, I don't know the whole story here with you, Joe. But I'm sure we'll get into the whole, what led to that decision. Before we get into that, I want to address something that's the elephant in the room that everybody's thinking. Actually, they're not. I'm the only one thinking this right now. Doesn't that sound like Shinholzer, Dan? Anyway,
it does.
I just want to ask what everyone's thinking. And we're like, no, Steve, you're the only one's thinking this. Trust me. And Joe, everything I've just said up until now and what I'm about to say could go away from the podcast. Remember I said at the beginning, like, there's anything we get into?
We get into it.
Like, so this is not live. And now if you're cool with it, we'll just leave everything in it as is. But I want to be sensitive to this. I grew up outside of Chicago. So, you know, I spent all these years, I my company, we would sub for GCs and home builders and remodelers. I've been around all the different trades my whole life, growing up, uncle and grandfathers and cousins, did, you know, many years as a painting contractor. I'd go to these big expos that Sherwin-Williams would put on or whatever. And I'm in the room with all these contractors and this and that. And Joe, man, all right, here it comes. I'm sorry.
Be straight. I'm here.
I am going to be straight, but this is me growing and trying to be a better human being here, of just being more sensitive to shit. I never saw African Americans in the trades.
We aren't.
Okay.
So, I get it.
Okay. And so like, I want to bring that up because, Dan, we've talked too. We're going to have some women on here, and women in the trades is a more common thing now, and it's the cool thing and this and that. Joe, I'm just, you said we're not. Okay. What, why is that? Like, what, from your point of view, guys, this is a podcast. Joe's black. Okay. So,
maybe on YouTube, but yeah.
like what's the scoop there, man? Educate me, because I'm certainly ignorant to this, the reason why.
I'll be honest. Just my experience, let me say that. My experience. Sure. We don't believe that we belong. And that's kind of deep. We don't believe we belong in that atmosphere. So specialized service, that's basically, we were pretty much taught, don't turn anything down but our collar. So you just want to make money everywhere you are. You just can't get focused enough to focus on one particular trade and believe in that trade, have the what's the word I'm looking for? Most of the plan, also to follow through on that plan. That's our biggest problem right there. I'll be honest with you. Not being able to follow through and specialize is always I can make money here. No, focus, mm-hmm. and we can get it done.
And that's what we were talking about yesterday, right, Joe? Like, yeah, his progression. And, you know, why don't you quickly summarize your progression from your community organizer days to today? And then I can kind of say my part, but I want you to represent your journey yourself, okay. I guess.
Yeah, well, I actually started out in business as a cleaning company. And like I told you yesterday, Dan, cleaning is kind of like, unfortunately, a race to the bottom. What I saw was the contracts, the opportunity to make a large amount of money. So that was pretty much my only reason for going into cleaning. And then over the months, I found out, no, it's not a lot of money in cleaning. So during those times, I was also asked to do repair work, property preservation work. So we transitioned into property preservation, doing repair work. And this is the part I didn't mention yesterday, Dan, is I actually, in 2014, I got sick. Mm. I had acute bronchitis, and it was because I was uninformed going into homes that had mold. So those homes that
I heard that in your voice.
Yeah, yeah.
in your video, like that was like a really emotional part of your coming out party for the Capstone waterproofing part.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
So I got sick. I missed Christmas with my family, and it was because I was so uninformed. So what's the next step? Hey, mold is a problem. So I went out and I got certified as a mold inspector and also a mold remediator. Pretty much through the class, I realized, wait a minute, mold is just a symptom. It's not the problem. The problem was water. So when I realized the problem was water and I started to learn, okay, water is causing a lot of these issues. So how can I stop water from coming into people's homes? So I'm the kind of guy where I want to learn the fundamentals first, and then I learn, see where I can get the experience experts from and try to kind of fill my gaps of where I'm learning those fundamentals. So it took me about 6 months before I started to offer the waterproofing services. The reason being is the foundation is pretty much the bones to anyone's house. So that risk of doing something wrong didn't outweigh, I mean, the reward didn't outweigh the risk. Maybe I'm saying it backwards, but either or. But it just wasn't worth it. So speed up a little bit, maybe about the 8th or 9th month, started to notice we were doing things different than other waterproofing companies. And look at baseball, our batting average was pretty much 999. So I got a little more confidence and kept going. So I looked at the fact that I'm a general contractor, but I'm seeing the difference in the general contracting work and my work versus on the client's face and how we felt at the end. So I need to make this change. So, as a general contractor, and like we talked about yesterday, Dan, you have, it's almost like you have a country where every service was a different state. So when the phone rung, somebody could be asking to do nail pops in the ceiling, waterproofing job, a roof, painting. And you start to turn into an order taker versus your passion in helping people. So that's what made me finalize, say, hey, you know what? It's all waterproofing. I'm going to educate as many people as I can because I don't want anybody to get sick the way I got sick, miss your family, missing out on Christmas. So cool. That's how we got here.
All right, so go ahead, Tom.
So what I'm hearing is this is, you started this and specialized because it's personal to you.
Absolutely. See,
and that's, so just for anyone listening, what I love about this, not only are you specialized, but it's driven by something that you've experienced. And that makes you as a salesperson, a marketer, a deliverer of the thing you do much more powerful, right? This, to me, this is what I would call, or what people in marketing call, an unfair advantage in the market. You have an unfair advantage because you've lived this shit and you've built your company with that bigger mission, like we talked about earlier, of being able to educate and protect people from this stuff. That's what I think is pretty cool, man.
Well, thank you. Absolutely. That's where we're going. Exactly. Yeah.
All right, so back to my lead-off question that got you down that road, and back to Tom's question. So you say you don't feel the Black community feels their place in contracting. You're obviously a self-starter, and so you chased all these answers and stuff down. Where'd you look for mentorship, and where did you learn the fundamentals? Is this all just you doing it on your own, or was it finding Tom and trying to piece it together? Or what was that look like?
It was a lot of research and a lot of people in the community through networking. I found a lot of, leaders in the general contracting world, leaders in just business period. So learning financing, accounting, marketing. But it didn't turn around until I was on YouTube one night and saw Mr. Reber. That's when everything turned around for me. I watched the videos for maybe about 2 weeks. And I went to the contractor fight and signed up. Signed up for the CSA. And then I think it was December, the 100K opened up. And I jumped on it and things have changed in my life, not just business, but in my life ever since.
I want to hear that, what's changed, but I'm sorry, I can't let this go. This whole thing about feeling like we don't belong there. Mm-hmm. I look at other industries in business and other careers and things like that, where African Americans excel. They do amazing. They, you know what I'm saying? And the thing here is, guys, we're all human beings. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, and for context, I was debating whether I wanted to share this or not. For people that don't know, and Joe, I don't even know if you know, because I don't want it to be like this gives me permission to bring shit up like this. But I have a multiracial family. Okay, I have three kids, and then my fiance has two kids. She's got two daughters, teenagers. My three kids were all adopted. My first son, he's white. He's from Atlanta. Got him when he was a day old. 5 years later, brought home my daughter from China. And then 5 years later, brought home my other son. His name's Tiga. He's from Haiti. Okay. And so, like, I want to be very clear, because I've gotten shit. I've gotten hate mail when I bring stuff up like this, like, you know, whatever, they're accusing me of shit. And I'm like, look at my fucking team picture, guys. Okay. Like, and my son Tiga opted to not go to college. He got a job with an HVAC company. He's doing HVAC work. And on occasion, I'll drop by one of their job sites in Colorado Springs and pick something up or drop something off for him or whatever it is. And it's the same thing. He's the only black guy for a mile around these big, huge subdivisions that are going up. You know, and I've asked him, I'm like, why do you think it is? And he doesn't have the maturity you do and the life experience and shit. He's like, I don't know. I just go to work every day. Right. So I want to be very clear. This is not like a, you could be a woman. You could be a man. You could be a combination of both. You could be any color. You could be anything. You want to do something, go fucking do it. Right? Like, go be an FW. And Joe, that's what you've done. You're like, so, and I don't know, and you can share if you want. I don't know what obstacles you've had to face because of your race and your business. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. I don't know. I don't know your whole story, but I'd love to just unpack that just for a couple more minutes to maybe give people that are listening some perspective here of some of the challenges that other people face, man.
Well, I guess the biggest thing is we, again, my experiences, yeah. we weren't taught contracts. We weren't taught networking. Where I came from, I'm going to be straight up and honest with you, we were taught to fight each other. Whether it be, we always figured a way to have a problem, whether it was because you lived in a different neighborhood, because you went to a different school. I mean, a lot of violence where I came from. So that's the last thing you're thinking of is trades and business. To be honest, and I'm not trying to sound like a movie or TV, but you were trying to survive just life, period. Yeah. So by the time you get older and you've been in the street a little bit, dealing with the violence, you're just trying to get a job, just make ends meet. That's pretty much it. So you do have some people who didn't have to go through that and maybe were able to be a FW and see past all of that. But I think that's where a lot of us were left, to be honest. Well,
I feel certainly very different. I grew up lower middle class in suburbs of Chicago. Had a good life and, I wasn't experiencing the violence and things that you did. But I avoided the trades my whole life because the people that made money in my world were white collar people. They were bankers, lawyers, doctors, and all my friends that had money, their parents, none of them were contractors. And all the contract, my family, my dad worked his ass off, was a contractor, didn't make any money, and the contractors I knew weren't, quote unquote, in my eyes at the time, as successful as what I saw in the lawyers and the doctors and shit like that. So a very different
situation than yours, but kind of the same outcome of just going, you know, I don't want to go into the trades. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, because it wasn't attractive. And I think that's why I talk so much about getting our heads right. That's why I talk about go make your fucking money. Like, you could be, you could make a shit ton of money in any industry, right? Because there's people that are doing it. And so I appreciate you sharing a little bit of that, man. I know, like, I think we all kind of live in our own little bubbles, you know, and that's not necessarily a good thing, because I mean, Dan, we were talking today about the most important thing for us as coaches is to understand the context that somebody has in their life. What's your worldview? What's your context? I can't fully help you if I don't know your whole situation. And in our case here, it's getting into the limiting beliefs, even, you know, that you're bringing in from your upbringing, your experiences with violence and all that other stuff. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's a huge contrast from a lot of the people we deal with that are, you know, second or third generation tradespeople or just wind up doing business. So it's, it's a cool story and a cool message, I think, that just has to get out there that you can jump out of your quote unquote, what the lane is that you're supposed to do. And, and with your, you know, the resilience to do it. So it's, that was a secondary reason, you know, for this call. First was like the whole capstone specialist. And then Tom and I started thinking, I'm like, shit, man, this is such a cool story anyway, that needs to get out there. It's not just, you know, it's our typical contractor, Tom. It's like a vet that like started, you know, a business when he got out of the service or something like that. It's like, this is a different trajectory. And so, And we've got a lot more people like Joe that are just like coming from a different background that needs to get the voice out. So,
yep. So Joe, what, let's look back over your time as a business owner. Share maybe one of your darkest times.
Oh, in the property preservation days, I had, maybe $15 on me. And I had a assignment to go clean a house, maybe 45 minutes away. So that was 45 minutes away. I drove those 45 minutes, get there, no water at the house. So the last $15 I had to use on water. It was a three-story townhouse. And I remember about the third hour I was there, I just laid down and I cried. And I said, never again. Never, ever, ever again. But the flip side of that was I did it because I had to feed my family. I had to make sure my wife and my kids were supported. I mean, I didn't make a lot of money, but each assignment, you know, it meant the world to me. So from there, that was my darkest time. That was my darkest time. Yep.
So when you said never again, what were you saying never again to?
Saying never again to that feeling, that feeling of emptiness, that feeling of how it wasn't in control. I have a new phrase now. To me, money is, I'm buying my freedom. Maybe that's not the right term, yeah, but I'm buying my freedom. So each time I sell a job, I'm feeding my family one more month. I'm paying the mortgage one more month. So, you know, that's the way I look at money now. Back then it was rough. It was really rough.
Dude, I would bet Dan's left testicle. You never bet your own testicle.
Right.
I know. You're liberal with my testicles for sure.
Well, he has a middle one. So he actually has one burn here. So, I would bet a lot that there's nobody listening to this that hasn't felt that way as a provider, right?
For sure.
I mean, I don't care. You're male, female, doesn't matter. If you are wearing the hat of provider in your home, and I don't care how successful you are or not financially, you could be down to your last 15, or you could have 15 grand cash in your pocket. I think you're still feeling that pressure as a provider to fucking do your job and come through and find a win.
Absolutely.
And you know, it's, All right. So from that moment, never again. How long ago was that? From today?
That was 6.5, 7 years ago.
Okay. So what was your first move after that proclamation? Never again. Like what was the first step that you took?
I actually sat down and made a plan. That's the first step. I actually sat down and made a plan. I broke down how pretty much similar to what we do here in fight. Per job, what can I make? How many people do I need to contact? Where is my ideal client? So I made a plan. So that was step one. And from there, I just used the same tenacity that I used to actually go out, network, market, and that's how I got started. That was my first move.
I don't know about you, Dan, but his first step was way different than mine. My low moments, you know what I did, Joe? I worked harder.
Oh, wow.
If I just work harder, like, I applaud you for taking the time to call a timeout. You're like, all right, timeout, man. We gotta draw up a new play. Because this play ain't working anymore. Man. And I tried, and a lot of us do that. I hear this a lot from guys, is we try to outwork our problem, right? You know, if I just work harder, and you can't, you know, in this story, you know, that Neil always reminds me of, is that story about the fly in the window. You know what I mean? You look at a windowsill and you got all the dead flies. They can see a new world on the other side of the glass and they keep flying into it. They knock themselves silly until they die instead of calling a timeout and seeing if another window or a door is open. You know? And so I was the fly for many years. And so I did not expect you to say you came up with a plan, because I don't think anyone's ever shared that with me, that was their first step.
Yeah, first step. I agree with that. I don't think I've heard either. And it's kind of like, I know the night, like you, Tom, I kind of tried to work my way out of my ignorance, you know, for years. And then I was a client of Tom's like 6 years ago. So until recently, but that's when I first reached him. And I remember specifically standing in my bedroom, both my sons shared a room, standing in the doorway, watching them sleeping and just being like, how the fuck am I going to turn this around? You know, because I knew something wasn't right, but like that was the motivation, like the family and their future. And it was the next day that I called Tom. But the joke is I had 3 years of Tom's emails in my junk folder because I wasn't ready for it yet. Like the early rumblings of, you know, the tremors, but I needed the LA to fall into the ocean before I made my move. And that night was emotionally, I made that move. So that's cool. That's cool. A lot of people don't take that step that you did.
So there's probably at least one person listening to this that said he's in his $15 moment right now, you know? Like, what do you tell that guy?
Plan. Stop and plan. but also, you have to believe. You have to believe. You have to believe in. Yeah,
I just have to wear a shirt that says believe on it.
Yeah, you have to believe. You have to believe that, you know, to that point, too, let me say, my mindset was, I stopped living, looking in the future. I didn't even look to the next month. I didn't look to the next day, the next hour. I looked to the next moment. So I started to live moment to moment. That built up momentum. I'm just living moment to moment. What's the right thing to do in this moment? And then the next moment, and then the next moment. And it built up the momentum for who I am today.
Well, fuck, I think Joe needs to start doing our videos on YouTube, man, because that was fucking
seriously.
Like, dude, I've heard that in the past before, like, just, it might have been like 12-step programs or something I've heard through the years or whatever, but like, just win the day, but then win the moment, win this next minute. Win, you know, when I coached football for many years, we would just go, just win this play. You got, the average play we worked out was like 6 seconds. And so literally we would go just win the next 6 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's what you did. And you're like, I'm going to win the moment.
And you know something too, it's not to go too far in a tangent, but
you can't go off on too big of a tangent.
what I broke down, during the low times, I looked at 24 hours. So I stopped looking at it as the next hour or this task to take 2 hours. I broke it down actually into percentages because I was so, at one point I had gotten so low that even if it was a 5 minute task to make a phone call, you didn't do it because you were so down. But then you realize, wait a minute, that's not even 1% of the day. That's not even 0.5% of my day. Make the phone call. So that's what kind of I got that mentality from.
One bite at a time, man.
One bite at a time, yeah. What's
funny, I was, 2021 for me is, and I'm not a New Year's resolution guy, so I want to be clear here. Like, I started this before New Year's. I started this in December. But I'm like, what do I want this next year, like the theme of my year to be? And for me, it's my health. I have high blood pressure. Big surprise. it runs in my family. Some shit runs in my family. And I've been pretty damn healthy my whole life. I'm like way better shape than the average fucking 51-year-old. And probably most 35-year-olds, to be honest with you. Okay. But I'm like, I know I'm not where I need to be fitness-wise. I just have a higher standard for myself, right? And I want to live longer. I want to be around with my woman and our kids and, you know, my friends. And I don't want to tap out, man. And so I'm just in that point now. And Dan, I know you're doing 75 hard right now and all that shit. Like same stuff. And I've been traveling here with this HGTV thing a lot, living in a hotel, fucking door dashing food. Dude, I've got it dialed in. I came home. My point here is I came home. I was gone for 3 weeks and I walked in the door. More specifically, I went in the bedroom and I took my clothes off and my queen was like, damn, you lost weight. You look better. You're more defined. You're this. And she's like, how did you do that on the road? You know, and in a roundabout way, she asked that. And I said, I made a commitment to move my body every day and work out. Okay. Like obviously, I'm counting my calories and I know like I order the same fucking thing for every night for dinner from Chipotle because it hits my calorie thing and it's relatively healthy here on the road. But dude, you know, the one I'm bringing this up for a reason. There's all these things that I have to do for my fitness, but I broke it down to what is the first domino, right? And for me, what I realized, the first domino for me to be healthy every day, Joe, is I get my ass out of bed and I develop the habit of within the first hour of being awake, I open the app on my phone that's a body weight calisthenic thing and they have a 10-minute stretching thing. And if I do the stretch within the first hour of the day, it's like eating a potato chip, right? You want another one? So then it gets me to do the body weight workout. Then it gets me to go for a 5-mile walk while I'm on the phone, or it gets me to do my kettlebells or run or whatever else I'm going to do that day for my workout. But the first little step every day is fucking get on the floor in the hotel room and stretch. It's like such an easy win that creates momentum.
Yep.
And I don't remember my whole point of that. Sorry.
I think it's the bite-sized pieces to success, right? You know, it's
right. Like, Joe's breaking it down by the minute and the percentage of the day. Like that was your domino.
Yeah, you know? Right. Yeah, but there's very few like single decisions that lead to a bad outcome. Like he's like, I'm gonna rob a bank. That's not one decision. It's like, okay, I need to do this. I'm gonna go get a gun. I'm gonna steal a car and whatever. It's like there's a bunch of bad decisions that lead to the bank robbery, and so. But a lot of people, and I heard in open coaching today, are overwhelmed on where to start. Like they look around them and the whole world's on fire and they don't know where to go. And I think Joe's, we always talk about Tom, just like how do you eat a whale one bite at a time? It's like, just break down the problems and just take a step. And then the next step comes naturally. It's like part of your stride, but you just have to start moving forward. So, That's awesome, Joe. I mean, that's, man, 90% of the people don't get that realization, or it takes them, myself included, just takes way too long to get to that point where it's just like, oh, it's simple. Just one step after another.
While you're giving Joe props there, I want to break it down even more with that, because Joe, you created a plan. Mm-hmm. You got crazy and broke down percentages of time in your day and analyzed the shit out of it and all that stuff. And I would say a lot of guys actually do make a plan, right? At least once a year they do, when the new year starts. Mm. They take 10 minutes and they fucking create a business plan. That I, you know, and of course that's the first thing that you said to that $15 guy right now who's struggling, right? But you implemented the plan. And I don't want that to be missed here. So, and I know you're in 100K and you're probably starting to see there's a lot of guys that are in the group, but they ain't doing the shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. It's like any other group, man. It's like people join a gym, they don't go to the gym. And then when they're at the gym, they fuck off, they don't work out or whatever. Like, what advice do you give somebody who might know what to do? A lot of us know what to do. We just don't implement it. So what do you tell that person?
I guess one of the bigger things that I implemented after being in the group was my KPIs and also the critical drivers. Mm-hmm. So if I say who I want to be, if I say I want the success I want, if my numbers aren't saying that, something's not right. So my whole thing for the guys that aren't doing it, just follow the plan per day. Look at your KPIs. Look how many leads you're getting, how many sales. You look at the revenue that's coming in. Are you putting content out every day? That's one of the bigger things too, content. Are you talking to your influencers? Do you have a readily list of influencers right in front of you daily? Are you making those calls? And, you know, those are the things that I'm doing.
What do you do on the days you don't feel like doing it?
Get my ass up and do it. Because, you know, you have a family to feed. You have a family to feed. But, you know, one day I'm not going to be here. And I want to be able to leave my kids with some type of legacy. Mm-hmm. Not just money, but just to see if they wanted to start a business. What are the rules to starting a business? What are the rules to running a business? What do you need to look at? What should be on a financial statement? If you're looking at a financial statement this month and it didn't go too well, can you figure out why it didn't go well? Are you going to ask the right questions to figure out what didn't go well? Mm-hmm. So that's what forces me to, hey, I don't feel like it. I don't have the luxury not to feel like it. That's how I look at it.
You know, it's funny. Not funny, but funny is Joe, a lot of people go, yeah, I have a family to feed, but they still don't implement.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I guess it could be, and this is, I'm just asking us here kind of general discussion. Is it that they're paralyzed? They don't know what that next step is. Is it, I don't want to just blanket statement go, it's laziness. Cause like we're people listening to this, and the three of us here are some of the hardest working motherfuckers around. We bust our fucking asses for decades, right? In many different ways. So I'm like, it can't be laziness. But I'm sitting here just going, all right, if it was enough just to go, I have a family to feed, then why am I not taking those steps every day and checking those boxes? You know?
Yeah.
I think it's fear.
Tell me more.
Want to go, Dan?
That's not so much fear of, like, they've got they acknowledge the surface fear of providing for their family or whatever, but it's the fear of, like, of not tracking your numbers, because the numbers don't lie. And so when you dig into, it's like getting on the scale every morning, Tom, or getting your blood pressure checked. It's like you go there and your blood pressure screwed up after 6 months of your effort. It's like, that's going to make you feel like shit. And so a lot of people are just afraid to expose themselves. And I think it's, I think you, once you truly get hurt, like damaged to some level, it's hard to really correct yourself. Like the people I know that are, you know, AA or something, like they hit rock bottom, like not like bounced off it, but like Malaysian airline into the ocean, smashed into rock bottom. And it's, and that's what a lot of people take, you know, and Joe had that. That was obviously the emotional moment, but it's like the whole selling the gap, right, Tom? It's like the current life, the current situation versus the potential of the future situation motivates how quickly we go after a goal. And most people, I think, just don't get clarity on what the consequences of not acting are. And then it's just repeating the same day over and over.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you guys think success is hard?
I do. I think it's the weakness of the human condition makes it hard. I don't think success is hard. I think applying our humanity against success is hard to achieve it.
Because I've had a big shift through the years that I actually believe now it's easy to make money. Let's just take that. Mm-hmm. I think it's really easy to make money. Where we grow up with these worldviews, right? Of you got to work your ass off to make money. It's nothing but hard work and blah, blah. And now I like working hard and I think you guys do too, right? But I don't think it's a condition of making more money. And I think there's some, you know, so I think, Dan, you're talking about the gap. Here I am over here. This is where I want to be. The middle is, you know, people call it the grind. They call it, you know, whatever. I'm thinking of Steve Schinholzer, who's, you guys know. Steve will tell you 1,000 times over. It's like, that's the gap is the day-to-day unsexiness of success. It's boring. It's unsexy, you know, and the biggest factor is just like, Joe, you just said, I get my ass up and I go do it. Like you just, you're consistently showing up. You know, this, not to make this about me, maybe not, but no, but it's just fresh in my mind. The example, Neil and I were reminiscing about how far we've come as a company in the fight over the past several years. And how me showing up one day on YouTube led to somebody finding me on YouTube that leads to me getting an HGTV show. I never set out to get a show. And Neil reminded me, he's like, dude, you were just like water. You just kept fucking showing up, doing your thing, and you got better over time. He's like, I didn't set out to be a host of a show. And I think that's, Joe, that's kind of what I'm hearing from you is like, you know, you could call it water or you could call it a bad rash, right? I'm showing up either way. And it's like water beats the rock every time because it's showing up.
Yeah.
And so that gap in between, and I think the devices that we're blessed to have, these little phones and microwaves and shit and remote controls have softened us to the point of thinking we can get anything instantaneously.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that fucks with our success.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great point.
So Joe.
Uh-huh.
You're doing GC work. Now you're specializing in waterproofing. Are you adding that as a specialty or are you dumping the GC?
I'm dumping the GC. I'm dumping it.
All right. So did your sphincter tighten up a little bit when you made the decision to do that? Did you get scared at all?
To be honest, yes. And I guess the person in my corner the most is my wife. And she asked me why, you know, she watches me and that, you know, you don't realize that they're watching you the way she is. And she's like, you have no reason to be scared. Just keep going. I'm your number one supporter. And that's, you know, that's what I'm going to do, Tom.
What were we most scared of?
With the GC business, you have so many different streams of income.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, since I made that announcement, I've turned away over 10 jobs.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute. Are you sure you want to do this? But at the same time, you look at, I've gotten 3 waterproofing jobs. And then you look at the gross profits and so on, you know, all that math stuff. Things are okay. Things are okay. And I don't have the headaches of, you know, the GC business. I'm doing what I love and, you know, providing people Well, see, a safe home. See, that's that. I'm telling you, Tom, that's the thing that got me too. Was when I've been going to different people's homes, I mean, people aren't using their basements because of water. Mm-hmm. They are just letting water just come in the basement when it rains because they're afraid of what it may cost. So my job is to go in and let them know and educate them the harmful things that this water is doing, not only to the foundation, but also that environmental issues. So a lot of times when at property preservation, the mold was always in the basement. So even if you walked in the house and had three levels of mold, it always started in the basement. So I let them know, like, you have an HVAC system in the house, that most of the time the HVAC system is in the basement. Yeah. So that's like your respiratory system as a human being. So if that them contaminants get into that that HVAC system, now it's over the whole house. So that's my job, is to just educate people on that. And it's not just water that get a little bit of water that gets in my basement each time it rains. No, it's more than that.
So you've seen I've seen some of your Facebook lives that you're doing and stuff. You talked earlier about making content and this and that. Mm-hmm. I also find this is again why I swing to specialize. I think it's easier to educate and create content around one thing, right? And so, I'm seeing you take your camera and you're walking around and you're pointing at stuff and you're educating people. What's been the reaction of people, of consumers in these homes when you're educating them? Like, I'm just curious what's going on with that.
To be honest, it kind of shows into the Google reviews. People are really happy. Most didn't have, 90% of them didn't have a clue what was going on. You know, you show them different, let's say if you have the different types of foundations. So you're showing them, this is how the water's getting in. You know, they didn't have a clue. So once you show them that, and it's funny, they become advocates of you, because now they go out and they say, hey, you need to have your downspout away from the house, 6 feet away from the house, because things that, you know, they've seen me do.
Yeah.
Seen me, you know, post. Or when I go to the house, I even give them tips. So I'm not in it just, I want to make $1 million. No. Look, yeah. You need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. And that's what we're doing.
Sounds a lot like your fitness plan, Tom. You know, so Tom, like, did this year set a, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, but you didn't set like a weight goal. He set a workout goal that he's going to do, workout 150 times a year, I think it is. And the results will follow. And that's kind of what you're doing.
Exactly.
With your education. It's just like,
exactly.
You get out there. So,
yeah, I have 312 workouts planned for the year. And that's basically taking a day off a week, you know, and on that day off, I'm still walking or something, you know, and, you know, stretching.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's that, I mean, cause dude, like Dan and I, you know, come from the painting industry, and Dan, we kind of struggle from time to time with finding that deeper reason that somebody needs to put fucking paint on a wall, right? It's a color issue. And I get it. There's the whole red thing or whatever in older houses, but like one of the things that we did, Joe, to market our experience to be different than our competitors, were we would point to the quality of the human being we were putting in your home. That's going to be painting your teen daughter's bedroom. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's the pain.
Without going on a tangent on that, we would build the case around that, but you have like a legitimate fucking reason. Like, I don't know if you guys heard the name Joe Polish. He's a big time marketing guy, amazing marketer. He started as a carpet cleaner, and he would have those ads in direct mail way back in the day that showed the microscopic views of the little dust mites in your carpet that looked like these big alien creatures. And he's like, the air quality in your home is blah, 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 because of it. And he would tie it into carpet and air quality and all this other bullshit. Basically, hey, you're breathing this and it's killing your baby, you know?
Yeah.
So people were like, clean my carpet, you know? And so, but that's similar to what you have here. And I just think it's a shitty situation that we have to have a trade like this. but it's great that you're genuinely helping people be healthier, man. And you know, you mentioned even like, forget the health for a minute here. People aren't using their basements because of water. So they got this house, they got 1200 square feet of unusable space down there because they fucking get water and they don't want to refinish the basement or spend any time down there. Now they're stealing square footage. They're stealing memories down there for kids or sleepovers or whatever it is. Shit can go really, really deep from a marketing perspective.
That's a gold mine. It really is.
I mean, like if I'm flipping through a magazine or if I'm scrolling on Facebook and an ad pops up or something pops up and it says, men, address this or your testicles will fall off this week. I'm going to stop, right? Like, that's going to get my attention. That's what you have here, Joe. You have this, you know, and I love the niche thing. Like, yeah, anyway.
So, another benefits too, Joe said, it was just like, it's such less friction in his business because it's like, you're doing jack of all trades. You need somebody that can do drywall, but that guy can't hang a door or whatever the other.
Exactly.
Now he's got a specialized workforce that are experts. And it's just, I imagine this makes your HR side of your business much easier.
Much easier. Much easier. Yes.
Much so, easier. So Joe, do you sell a lot to realtors and things like that when someone's buying a house?
Yes.
Yeah. Cause that this falls into what I call the have to shit, right? If somebody's going to buy a house, they don't have to paint it, Dan.
No, but they have to get the mold done.
The water issue. Address mold. They have to address certain things that are like real shit, you know? So again, shit, I might have to start a waterproofing company now, man.
This is what happens every time, Joe. These other trades and Tom and I, the wheels start thinking, like, why are we really like walking uphill both directions in our career doing painting? It's just like.
So, Dan, I know you and Joe have shot the shit a couple times prior to this today. This is really my first time talking with Joe at length like this. Yes. What else should we be talking to Joe about, man?
Good question. Let's turn that spotlight on Joe as our customer. What are you obviously taking advantage of the content we've got and everything? What, how could we serve you better? And also, take it even deeper, like your people in your situation, you know, like your community coming into the trade, self-learned, like how do we better serve you with information?
Wow. That's a good question. Cause you guys do such a great job. Wow, Dan, you got me. I'm being, you know, completely honest. You guys do such a great job. You've given me a different way of looking at business. You know what I mean? In terms of knowing my numbers, knowing how to actually pivot when numbers aren't right, knowing when to pivot when numbers are good. So, hey, maybe I need to charge a little more now. You know, if I have these amount of leads coming in, if I have too many leads coming in, okay, Joe, maybe you aren't charging enough to be able to know who my main influencers are. So I think, to be honest, that was the biggest thing, influencers. Besides the financial side of it, was influencing. Influencers. That has made a tremendous difference. The content is great, but learning learning to, who's in front of my customer? And, you know, who's in front of my customer? And once I grasp that, it's been great. It's been great.
Yeah. So when you came in to the fight world, and I don't even mean the 100K and CSA and all that other shit. I just mean in general. You probably heard me running my mouth about raising your prices. And was there a time, I don't want to make an assumption here. So was there a time that you like sat down and had a moment where you're like, yeah, I'm not charging enough?
Yes.
Okay. So I just, that sets up the question. And if it was no, then I wouldn't ask the question. So there's a lot of fear around raising prices. And I personally believe it stems from two things. Number one is just your view of money and your value more than anything. And number two, which is really big, is If I don't have enough, if I don't have a lot of leads coming in, right, it can get really scary. It's like, if you're only getting like a lead a week, you're like, oh man, I got to sell that thing, right? There's this. So what did you have to work through to have the confidence to raise your prices?
Just what you said. When you aren't getting a lot of leads in, you actually start to lower your prices. And what I've learned now is it's no way I can provide the service that I provide by lowering my prices. And I want to keep a standard for the client. And if I'm not in a certain realm as far as pricing, I can't give them that service. I can't give them that feeling they get when I'm finished. So that's why I got to raise my prices at times. Yeah.
So did seeing that number on a piece of paper, like you go through the, maybe use Tom's worksheet and you see, I got to charge whatever it is per hour. When you're doing quotes, is there like a little bird on your shoulder telling you, like, if you start thinking, I know my brain, when things are stressful, I always like start taking money in my own pocket, you know? And it's like, then I had this little reaver bird on my shoulder. It's like, shut the fuck up, dude, smacking me. And you hold your line. So it's like, is that kind of how it worked for you as well?
Yeah, definitely. It happens. What I've learned, I use the job cost sheet for every lead I go through, every proposal I put out. I always make sure I use the job cost sheet. And just seeing those numbers, that takes away that, you know, you don't feel comfortable charging this much. That takes it away because it's all right there. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that going back, Tom, is like, I think we talk about success easy, and I go, I think that's where the fear comes in with people, because it's like, oh wow, this worksheet says I need to charge $86 an hour. Then the head trash kicks in, and I haven't been charging enough in the past, or I can't do this, and that's where the character, for lack of a better word, of the person, I think, takes over, or grabs another beer out of the fridge, you know, and it's like repeats the same thing tomorrow. So it's interesting. That's why I was just kind of curious how you looked at it, Joe. Cause to me, it's like, you know, that's why we push people to track, because then you're not doing a gut instinct. You know, that's why I could look at any room and quote it, but I go through my estimating software. Cause you know, it's like, if I'm having a bad day, I'm pricing it bad. And if I got laid that morning, I'm not pricing it, giving away charity jobs. It's like, it's always just the computer and the production rates is there. And right. So, that's great. So cool. Thanks for proving our point.
I know that job costing thing has changed more lives.
Oh yes.
Than anything, because, and I don't care whose job costing sheet it is. There's a shit ton of them out there in the world, man. It doesn't have to be mine. It's just like when you just start job costing and you can just unemotionally go, okay, what does the math tell me? Mm-hmm. Like that often is enough motivation for people to go, fuck this. Like there's no way I'm putting myself through this to make, you know, $17 on a job, you know, like it's, I remember I had a, when I first started learning my numbers, I went into this big ass two-story foyer, had all this head trash about pricing. And it was a big ass foyer. And they wanted the walls done and the ceilings and all this other shit. And it was really up high, like bigger than whatever you're picturing in your brain. That's how big it was, right? And gorgeous hardwood floors, you know, that ladders were going to be on and all this other stuff. And I figured it out the way I had always figured it out. And it was about a 17. That's why I brought up $17. It was about a $1,700 price is what I came up with to paint this thing. Right. And then I went, okay, wait a minute here. This is like me self-checking, cause I just started job costing at some old jobs and stuff. And I'm like, well, if we produce this, if I sell it and we produce it remotely consistent with our historical data, and at the time I was getting give or take a 10% net profit. Okay. I'm like, okay, so that's like $175, $180. out of this $1,700-$1,800. I started asking myself this question: am I willing to paint this for $175?
Yeah.
Because that was one of the things that really flipped the switch for me, and I remember on that bid, when I was doing the math in my head, I said, no, but I would do this. I was still being a wuss. I said I would do this for $1,000. So I automatically adjusted the price to where the net, if we got a 10%, you know, it wasn't that much because my numbers are off here because I didn't go from 1700 to 10 grand. Okay. I want to be clear on that. Whatever it was, you get the point. Like it was worth it that we were going to make a dollar amount. And that's similar. You guys know the story, you know, Steve Shinholzer has always talked about when he started his pond business. He was like, I'm not getting in my truck unless I'm going to pocket $1,000 a day.
Yep. I remember that. Yep.
After everything is said and done. And people are blown away because let me be clear. He was he had built and sold North America's like largest swimming pool maintenance company out on the East Coast there. He was managing 3,000 teenage lifeguards. I mean, this is 35, 40 years ago, he was making bank, millionaire, multimillionaire, sold the business. Had several years where he didn't do anything and then decided one day for many reasons he was going to start this water feature business. And he's like, what would motivate me to get out of bed in the morning and go fix a pump or whatever? And the number popped in his head was $1,000. So he just started adding $1,000 for himself on everything he priced. And if he didn't get the job, he didn't give a shit. Cause he's like, the ones I get, I'm making the money.
$1,000, yeah.
Dude, his first year, I'm not going to share all Steve's numbers here, but let's just say from basically year one in that business, and he just sold that business a couple weeks ago, 100% of the business. He's been selling it to his employees over time here. He's like never made less than like $250,000 in his pocket ever. And that was 15, 18 years ago when he started it.
Yeah.
Because he had that mentality of, you know,
the non-negotiable.
Non-negotiable. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Which he calls don't mess with the money. That's his rule. Yeah. Don't mess with the money. You know,
it's funny. I saw in the CSA, one of the guys posted up just a detailed job costing their last job of 2020. And they have an app, was a job cost calculator or something. It's just super simple where you put in your cost, your sales price, and it shows you your GP and what's going in your pocket. And just something as simple as that for somebody when they got on the phone and the customer is like, hey, can you give me X amount discount or whatever? Just like a tool like that, just the numbers don't lie. It's like, shit, my margins went down to 29% to save this guy this money. It's like people just need to use these tools as like a silent accountability partner, really. Cause it's like numbers don't lie. And you stay true to it and understand what changing those numbers means your kid's not going to school or whatever the hell you use that money for is that's where the motivation comes from. But when you're just kind of doing it from the seat of your pants, you know where that leads. So.
So Joe, I'm going to ask you a question, then I'm going to announce a couple things here for the podcast, and then I'll let you answer the question. That way you have a minute or so to think of it.
Okay.
All right. But in about a minute or two, you're going to have the stage for a couple minutes of tens of thousands of contractors around the world. Literally, you get to give them a message. So I'll just leave it at that.
Oh man!
All right. So okay. No pressure.
Deserved for eternity. By the way, this never dies. This podcast.
Yeah, and I'm see, and I'm being nice because I'm letting him think about it. So there you go. Because it's a big deal. It's important. So before we wrap up here, for anyone listening, I super appreciate you guys hanging out with us here today. And if you didn't get anything out of this, you need to go have a brain scan done or something because it's fucking nuts. In fact, I'm sitting here thinking of the 300 and something, almost 400 podcast episodes. And I haven't had a guest on every one, but the majority I have. Probably. Or at least half. So 150, 175 guests, probably somewhere around there. I am pretty confident from my point of view for many reasons. Number one, Joe, the enjoyment factor. Like, I love talking to you, man. Like, you're a fucking winner all day. Your story, the things you've shared. I have to say, I can't think of one other guest, and I've had really good ones. I've had really good people, and I appreciate all them, and I'm not knocking them. But I think this is the best interview we've ever had on this show. Seriously. Wow. Hands down. And so, and Dan helped too. No, but I would also say, Dan, we brought you on the show this year and we're doing this. And I think personally, again, I just think it's taken our conversations to a different level. This is about knowing yourself and myself. Like, guys, I can only yell at you people in a microphone by myself in a room so much, right? And I know people are fucking tired of it too. And yeah, I've heard Reber talk about raise your price. I've heard this, and I'm like, we got to do something to shake this up. And we hired Dan as a coach last year. And then in those conversations, I'm like, how do you feel about coming on and, you know, being my wingman here? Because Dan, you got, obviously, you know, I could brag about you for another hour here, but so I just think the combination of these things, I'm fired up about. So anyway, so guys, if you've been listening to this, appreciate you listening. If you're not yet a member of our free Facebook group, go to thecontractorfight.com/Facebook and get your ass in there. You can certainly reach out to our team. If you wanted to learn more about the 100K program, just email help@thecontractorfight.com. And not supposed to do more than one call to action, but I'm breaking the rule. The other call to action is if you found value in the show, give it a review, right? Because that's how it gets in front of more people and helps more people and helps us reach our mission of bringing respect and dignity back to the trades and shit like that.